Talking Records Podcast. Talking Records Podcast. Talking Records Podcast. We talk about our favorite records. Talking Records Podcast. We're so glad you tuned in. Thank you all for listening. You showed up to the right place. Jed and his friends dive deep and analyze the records we have grown to love. We'll tell you how we found the band, then give you a track by track breakdown of all songs. So grab your favorite beverage and pull up a seat. Today we'll look at another record in its entirety.
Hello, what's up everyone? My name is Jed and you're listening to Talking Records, a music podcast that brings friends together to talk about the albums we grew up loving. The goal is to round up a bunch of background information on the album and then discuss its tracks. On this show, we talk about how we discovered the album and what it's meant to us over the years. Today, I am absolutely pleased to be joined by my friend Brian. What's up, Bri?
Hey, Jed. Thanks for having me on. It's good to finally be here.
Yes, going back as far as 2000, right? In our time at the radio station in college?
I always laugh when you mention the station on the show. Those were good times. Anyway, long-time listener, Dave and I always listen to you when we make dinner.
Awesome. Well, wait, how come I've never been invited over for dinner?
Oh, you wouldn't like the word shit we made.
All right. Well, I'm glad you've agreed to co-host today, Brian.
Great. What do I do as co-host?
You can read this announcement for our socials.
Okay. Make sure you check out Talking Records on Instagram and Facebook. Give us a like or a follow and join in the chatter about our favorite albums. It's a fun community of talking about the records we love, and we want to hear from you. You can also email us at talkingrecords@outlook.com. The podcast can be found as easily as searching us on any podcast hosting platform. So tell a friend, tell two friends, and help spread us around. Thanks, everyone.
Today, Brian and I will be talking about Weezer's 2001 self-titled album, better known as The Green Album. Weezer, or more commonly referred to as the Green Album, was released on May 15, 2001 by Geffen Records. Rick Ocasek, who produced the band's debut album, was brought back in to produce this one as well. This would be the band's first album in 5 years.
It was a long 5 years.
When the band had finished touring for their previous album, Pinkerton, they went on hiatus. Rivers went back to Harvard, and then bassist Matt Sharp focused on his side project, The Rentals. When Rivers dropped out of Harvard, he formed the band Homie, where he met bassist Mikey Welsh. Members of the Boston-based Mighty Mighty Bosstones had told Rivers that he should connect with Mikey. After Homie ran its course, Rivers tried to get Weezer rolling again. But Sharp was not interested in returning, preferring the consistency of his new band. Homie bassist Mikey Welsh was brought in to replace Sharp, but the rehearsals quickly broke down over creative differences. The band went their separate ways, Rivers retreating to his home, where he shut himself in, painted his walls black, and focused on songwriting. During this time, the internet was becoming much more prevalent, and Weezer fans were able to connect and sing their praises for the band's music. Critics had panned Pinkerton, but the fans were now giving voice to another viewpoint, that the album was great, and renewed interest in the band was ignited. Weezer played Japan and then the Warped Tour that summer. The high-profile shows built the band's confidence back up, and they were ready to make an album number 3. But Geffen wasn't quite as excited. According to Carl Cook on the Carl's Corner Fan Club magazine, almost every possible factor in the making of this new album had been called into doubt for one reason or another in the recent period since getting off the road in mid-September. From the inaccessibility of several possible producers, to the inaccessibility of certain key preferred studios, to the caliber of the songs being rehearsed by the band. The band kept at it, sending out various demos of songs. The band even enlisted the help of fans on the internet to help them choose songs to go on the demos.
I was one of those nerds online. I remember the Weezer website and being able to hear some of those demo songs.
The power of the internet's role in Weezer's return cannot be overstated.
It felt like finally it was the fans' voices, you know, instead of the market telling us how good something was. I knew we all knew Pinkerton was awesome.
I mean, I did. Finally, the band and the label were ready to hit the studio in December of 2000. Opting not to head out to a Kasich studio in New York, the band set up at Cello Studios in Los Angeles. They had weeded over 70 demos down to around 20, with Okasic trimming that number down even more. They spent a month pounding through the songs, getting drum and bass tracks down. For editing the reels, the final best basic takes of each of the 19 songs they had worked on were compiled into 6 master 2-inch tape reels. From the 25 or so master reels they were spread out on, the new basic tracks were Gimme Some Love, Homely, Island in the Sun, Starlight, Oh Girlfriend, My Best Friends Are Gone, aka My Best Friends, Crab, If You Want It, Inside a Smile, Knock Down, Drag Out, Don't Let Go, Crying and Lonely, Breakup, Hash Pipe, Oh Lisa, Teenage Victory Song, Sugar Booger, No More Disappointments, and Always.
Oh, I loved Always.
Why didn't they put that song on the album?
I don't know.
The album clocks in at a whopping 28 minutes and 34 seconds. You mean to tell me they couldn't have put 2 or 3 more songs on here?
Yeah. That always struck me as being strange.
They had so many songs, and then the album was only 10 songs.
Would adding a few more really make or break the success of this thing? In the night I was born, lived a new summer morn, always. Sing your love,
come to me. During the recording sessions, an executive at the band's label, Geffen Records, visited to observe the band's progress and expressed dissatisfaction with several tracks. With the band's popularity rising, the label didn't want them to do anything out of the ordinary, or anything that would alienate fans, which in turn might have led to a rather sterile, rather bland album. Also, it is rumored that Rivers wasn't going to put any of himself into these songs. He had been humiliated by the poor reception of Pinkerton and decided these songs would be more straightforward and less emotional.
Well, he nailed it.
The band relocated for 3 weeks to a smaller studio in another part of Cello Studios. This was the same studio where the Beach Boys recorded Pet Sounds. This is where Cuomo and Bell worked on guitar takes, while the entire band recorded vocal takes.
I read somewhere, probably the internet, that Rivers did all his guitar tricks in like one take.
Dude's a machine.
Yeah.
In mid-January, the project was halted after the studio flooded. Nothing Weezer had been working on was damaged. Then, Rivers came down with a nasty sore throat when it came time to do the vocals. Adam Willard was a drum tech on the album and is credited with playing some of the fills on the recording. Okay, so now I want to get into the real, you know, meat and potatoes of this, Brian. I think you can probably remember when this album came out, around the time this album came out, and I called you.
Dude, you were so bummed out.
I was, and I just, you know, okay, so I can remember exactly where I was when I first heard my first taste of this album. The radio station got the Hash Pipe single ahead of the album release, and we were all sitting in the office one day, and our GM said, "Want to hear the new Weezer?" And I couldn't believe it, you know, new Weezer.
Yeah.
I hadn't heard anything from the band since I was in high school, and so much had changed since Pinkerton had come out. I had gotten, you know, fully into punk rock, and I'd formed my own band and graduated high school, and, you know, so much had happened. I was in a totally different place, you know, but here was the band I had loved and relied on, and they had new music, and so I had to hear it. And I remember hating that title, Hash Pipe. And when the song came on, I was just like, Hash Pipe, you know, she popped the CD single in and the opening chords started up, and, you know, Rivers had that falsetto going on, and I just hated it.
I don't. Dude, you called me right away.
I had to. I had to. I was so disappointed. It was just that one song, and I, you know, looking around the room at everybody else, no one else liked it, and I was bummed.
I remember you called me all depressed about it. I wanted to hear it. I was like, it can't be that bad. When I heard the song, I knew exactly why you hated it. It was a weird way to be introduced to the Zalem.
I mean, I picked the album up regardless, you know, when it came out. And though my stance on Hashpipe has maybe softened a little bit, it's still my least favorite song on the album. Had they released, like, Island in the Sun or Don't Let Go first, my first experience with this album would have been totally different.
Oh, totally.
And it was. I ended up liking this album well enough. I mean, sure, it's a bit repetitive, and it's really not terribly interesting, but it still rocks. And while I'd probably be more likely to pop on their first record or Pinkerton, Green is still better than everything that came out afterwards, in my opinion. It's a fun little record to throw on in the car, and to me it's significant as being the last time I don't know, I really cared about this band.
It's extremely safe, nothing too adventurous, but, you know, I don't know, it's the band you know and love. If you like the band, you'll like this album. It's just, I don't know, hearing more of a band you like, I guess. But you're right. It would have been nice to hear a little variation.
So, Bri, tell me, how did you get into this album, aside from my depressing phone call?
Well, I'd been a longtime fan. And, you know, since the Blue album, and I love Pinkerton. But then the band all but disappeared. So fast forward to, I don't know, what was it, like our junior year? The album came out, and I was so excited to hear it. I had heard some of the demos and stuff, but none of that was really that exciting in the raw form, you know, just demos. And I bought the CD and just remember really enjoying it. I don't know. It was over really quickly, and it just had a bunch of great, fast-moving songs. They were memorable. They were catchy. Yeah, I don't know. I remember you heard the album before I did. Your lack of excitement that kind of sparked away my nerves, I guess. I was worried. But I ended up liking it. It's not great, but it's not terrible. You got something to throw on if you want to listen to add up some good music, I guess.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, Bri, I say we dive into these songs. Are you up for that?
Well, I got nothing better to do.
All right, let's do it. The album kicks off with Don't Let Go. But if there comes a day you should turn your heart away, I'll be down on my knees begging for that girl to stay. Don't let go. This is a pretty straightforward opener. Best summed up by the title and the line, "But if there comes a day you should turn your heart away, I'll be down on my knees begging for that girl to stay." Real simple stuff. I mean, we're not going to be doing a ton of analyzing these songs for lyrical content.
No, we're not. I mean, even Rivers can't be bothered to make meaning of his own lyrics. I've seen interviews where he basically says, "I just sat down and wrote it and didn't think much about what I was writing."
Which is kind of a shame. Like, why not put some thought into what you're writing?
He didn't want to get burned, like, after Pinkerton.
I know, but it doesn't have to be deeply personal to be good. Maybe some clever wordplay, maybe, you know, some interesting stories. I don't know. A song about someone who would be there for a girl no matter what. Anything you desire, I will set it at your feet.
Yeah, it's not terribly deep, but man, what a great opener. And a way to restore our hopes in the band, you know, after Hashpipe. This song is bright and fun, and I don't know if it's a Green cover or what, but right away, this album just feels happier.
You said it, man. Brighter, fun, and maybe the bright green cover helps. I mean, the Blue album was full of breakup songs and rejection and being lonely, but I don't think of that album as being a sad album either.
It's weird the way our brains work.
Well, it's a solid opener.
Yeah. It comes in with, I guess, Rivers playing the D5. You know, he's got those high notes ringing out. I mean, the majority of the song is just switching between the D and the G power chords.
Right. Just one pace, you know, charging forward. With Rick Ocasek's help, the album sounds a bit more polished than Pinkerton, which the band produced themselves. It's definitely good to have a guy like Rick in to oversee things and help bring the band's potential forward.
It's just too bad me didn't offer to help with the lyrics.
The next song is Photograph. Another great song, less driving than Don't Let Go, but it's got that great power pop sound. It's a song about wanting love and going after it.
It's like a song about longing for love.
Yeah. He sings, because everybody wants a dream, something they can barely see.
Yeah, it's like a romanticized version of love, of what love is, like a fantasy. He compares it to a photograph, and in photographs, everyone is always smiling, or people's photos on Facebook always show them having, like, the best time.
Yeah.
But they can be a bit phony, you know?
We look at them and feel envious that things seem so carefree and wonderful, but the pictures don't really tell us the whole story. You know, like that kid was screaming before you stuck that Christmas sweater on him.
Right, right.
This song features a lot of background vocals from Mikey. Is this where we talk about Mikey?
Yes, I loved Mikey.
I was a huge fan of him. He just looks so cool with his jean jackets and tousled
yes!
hair.
Yes! His stage presence was amazing.
I really liked the brief Mikey era, and I don't know, I was disappointed that he wasn't able to continue due to a lot of personal mental health stuff, eventually drugs. He was in the band for only a short while, but I don't know. He brought a lot of personality to the band, I thought.
He just seemed like the guy in the band you could approach and hang out with. Well, him and Pat.
This song was released as the first single in Japan, Madder Than Hashpipe.
Oh, man. They got it right in Japan.
I know, right? My introduction to this album would have been a hell of a lot smoother had they run this out ahead of Hashpipe.
I wouldn't have had to listen to you whine on the phone.
You loved it.
Right.
My last note on this song is when I saw them live, Pat actually sang the song while Rivers played the drums.
I remember that little experiment. Is this a song that ends with, like, clapping?
Yeah, I think so. Anyway, great song. You know, back-to-back, two awesome songs. And then we get to Hashpipe. The lead single for the new Weezer album. First record in like 5 years.
Oh, yeah.
Just still not over it.
No.
The label fought with Rivers against making this the first single, but he would not budge. I would love to know why he was so hellbent on getting this out first. Especially since El Scorcho was a bomb as a single off Pinkerton.
Let's try picking the weirdest song on the album as the single. Again.
It's got this chugging guitar and then a falsetto over the top. It doesn't fit.
And the lyrics are all over the place. I heard the song is about prostitutes trying to score drugs or something.
I have no idea. The album never came with a lyric sheet, so I have to trust online lyrics. They are weird. I can't help my boogies. They get out of control. I know that you don't care, but I want you to know. The knee stocking flavor is a favorite treat of men that don't bother with the taste of a teat. I mean, is that for real?
I don't think so.
I think it is. And according to Enemy Magazine, Rivers had been approached by Ozzy Osbourne for some songs, and Rivers had offered him this one. Can you imagine if this had been an Ozzy song?
I don't want to.
To me, this song sounds like a cross between Kiss's Lick It Up and the Peter Gunn theme. You know, mash them together and then sing in a falsetto. And then steal I Can't Help My Feelings, I Go Out of My Mind from the Beatles. You can't do that. And you've got Hashpipe.
Holy shit, you nailed it.
Thanks, Weezerpedia. Anyway, I somehow ended up with the 12-inch single of this song on vinyl. And it's got this like Jimmy Pop from Bloodhound Gang remix.
Oh, I never need to hear that again.
All right, let's move on to Island in the Sun. When you're on a holiday, you can't find the words to say all the things that come to you. And I, want...
I like this song.
Oh, me too, me too. One of my top five Weezer songs.
It's just so happy. It makes me feel joy, which is what music is supposed to do, right? When this song comes on in the summertime, I get really excited.
With clean guitar and some backing vocals.
Hip, hip.
It just feels lighthearted and carefree. Brian Bell, who visited Rivers in his self-imposed exile, saw the song title written on Rivers' wall and became interested in the song.
I read on like SongFacts or someplace that this song almost didn't make the album.
Ugh, that would have been a shame. I just like this one. It's got a good tempo. It's a song about running away together, playing, having fun.
It's like an escape.
Yes.
We all need like a break from reality every once in a while. But to me, this song has like a sad element to it as well. It's weird, right? There are those two minor chords, the E and then the A. And they're descending.
Yeah.
Kind of like
climbing
downward.
And, you know, for me, this song is an example of what's missing from this album. Throughout the song, you have the clean guitar, the single note lines, maybe some acoustic guitar in the background for texturing. The chorus comes in with the big loud parts like Undone or My Name is Jonas off the first record. You know, that album had a ton of acoustic guitar in the background, single note stuff, you know, stuff to like beef up the songs and make them more interesting. This record has almost none of that. To me, that's what makes the first record, the first Weezer record, more than just like a power pop punk album. These songs feel a little empty. Like, where was Rick to suggest filling out these songs a bit more?
It all seems rushed. I liked Pinkerton for its heavier and more raw sound, but I think, yeah, you're right.
Well, we'll speak more about that as we reach side two. Anyway, two videos were shot for this song. One where the band is hanging out at a Mexican wedding, and then another one where the band, minus Mikey, is hanging out with monkeys. I've honestly never seen either video.
I love how MTV just had the push to be like, nope, make another video. This one stinks.
Anyway, it's just a great song. It's a fun Weezer tune. It's the Weezer I remember from the Blue Album. It's like their most popular song, I think. I mean, Spotify has them down as 690,202,373 streams. You know, so that's a lot. That's like double what Buddy Holly has. So that's a lot. I mean, I think of like Weezer's big hits as being Say It Ain't So, Buddy Holly, Undone. But Island in the Sun surpassed them all. You know what their fourth most played song is on Spotify?
Don't say it.
Beverly Hills.
No. Oh, no. Why?
I don't know. I don't know. All right, let's move on to Crab.
In one of the great misheard lyrics of my life, I thought he was saying, "Crab, if you need it, she put her knickers on." And then, a few years ago, the internet told me I was 100% correct, and that's actually what he's saying.
Knickers. I could never understand why he would be singing about a gal putting their knickers on.
Well, I guess it's about a guy who wants to be with his girl, but she shut him down.
Yeah, throw those knickers back on. Get out of there. I mean, come on. I don't know, man. I love the beat and the melody to this song, but the lyrics just don't do it for me. And like Island in the Sun, this song features a guitar solo that just follows the vocal line.
Yeah.
Like, open that up and play something, man. Rivers can clearly wail. Why just follow the same vocal pattern on guitar? That always struck me as being a really weird thing about some of the songs on this album.
Weirder than Crab at the Booty, Taint Gonna Do No Good?
No, that's the weirdest. Anyway, this song kicks off side B, short sides. You know, this record is not very long. They had all those songs, and again, we're complaining about the length of this record. Crab kicks off the side, and to me, Brian, I don't know what you think. Side B, not quite as interesting as side A. I think this is the point in the record where you start to hear a lot of sameness. A lot of the songs kind of start to kind of blend together. Again, I like this album. I know we've been complaining about this record a bit, right? But we do it out of love. I like the album, you know, but I think it's because I have such hopes.
It's like you expect certain things and then when they don't happen, you feel disappointed, but you still like it. But you think of what could have been.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, songs like this one, I like this song. I don't like the lyrics. So, you know, when it comes on, I'm bopping my head and I'm just not really singing along, I guess.
All right, let's move on because I like the next song.
I do too. All right. The next song is Knock Down, Drag Out. Taking cues from Green Day, a band Rivers admired, this song borrows themes and even lines from Green Day's Worry Rock, where Green Day's Billy Joe sings a knockdown, drag-out fight, fat lips and open wounds. Rivers comes in with Take No Prisoners here in this knockdown, drag-out war that we're waging on each other forevermore. To me, it seems like a song about two people who just can't seem to get along despite being in a relationship. Or as one is fizzling out.
A great little pop punk tune. Yeah, I see the Green Day reference. Both songs are very poppy.
Weezer even went as far as to cover Worry Rock.
That's awesome. Nirmada is such a great album.
Another Weezer B-side called Starlight shares the same chord progression. So it seems like Rivers had these ideas and kind of used them in different places to see what works.
Right. Like, I like this pattern of CF. I'm going to move it around the neck of the guitar and play it at different speeds and pick the song that sounds the best.
Yeah, I mean, Knockdown wins for me. It's a great song.
Love this song. It just charges for it, and it's super catchy. It's a song about two people fighting, and yet it makes me so happy.
Right? How'd they pull that off? I love it when a song like sounds upbeat and happy, but is actually about something really kind of like sad or like
right?
Intense. Like Less Than Jake does that a lot.
Yeah.
Anyway, another guitar solo that just follows the vocal line, though. Can you imagine this one with like a sweet, like crunchy solo, you know, something interesting?
I know, would have been great. Do you think he just didn't have any ideas for guitar solos? Why even have them? I've seen Weezer live, and he doesn't play this boring shit. When I saw them, they played this song, and he definitely did something different there. And I remember liking it way better.
There just wasn't any development in these songs.
But what do you think the sessions were like recording this thing?
All right, I got a quote here. According to Teenage Victory Songs, producer Rick Ocasek recalls that during the sessions for Green, Cuomo would ruthlessly coach bassist Mikey Welsh through scores and scores of takes, many of which Ocasek said were album-worthy to his ears and virtually indistinguishable, until it was as perfect and bland as could be. Indeed, most of Green feels as though it could have been played by machines. Whatever made Get You click, Cuomo wanted none of it. No flaws, no friction, no soul.
And there it is, folks. I mean, does that not sum up Green? I love this record, but that basically sums up. You know? But it works. I don't know. It works. It's like a cheap thrill, right?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I don't know. You like what you like. I like this album. I mean, for as much as, you know, I feel disappointed by the length and disappointed by the rather boring solos and the lyrics that don't really mean anything, it's still a fun record. I still enjoy it. I still put it on all the time. I like it in the car. You know, it's upbeat. It moves. I don't know. Yeah, maybe cheap thrill. But I don't know. That's being a little harsh, maybe. The melodies are catchy. The tempos are driving. I don't know. You know?
It's not strong music, but it's good music.
Especially when you put it up against, you know, what followed.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, let's not go there.
All right, let's keep it here. Let's keep it here. The next song is Smile. You wanted some love, I'll make it happen. Rivers sings on this song, Seeking Love. He's infatuated with someone and promises he could love that person.
Not one of my favorite songs on this album, because it's like, I don't know, a bit bland. But I actually heard a piano version once, and I think Brian Bell was actually singing it, and I like that version a bit more.
Oh, I got to hear that. Yeah, this song doesn't really do it for me either. It just kind of passes by, not leaving any sort of like lasting impression. This is the song on the album that I typically say, how does that one go again?
Yeah.
Despite listening to this record like thousands of times.
And they had like, what would you say, like 70 demos?
Yeah. 70, down to 20, down to 10.
And not one of those was more interesting than this one?
Guess not.
That's bullshit, because I've heard a lot of those demos, and I would have picked so many of them over this one. It's not a bad song.
Yeah, no, it's not bad or annoying or anything. It's just blah.
It's sweet, though. He really likes her. Give me a chance if you can force yourself, he sings.
Come on, darling, just let it happen. It's sweet, yeah, but also a little sad because you can almost hear a little desperation there.
Is this one of the more introspective songs on this otherwise emotionless record? They buried it back here, but he couldn't help himself getting one on here.
He longs to be embraced by her smile, her love.
It's a love plea. What do you think of a solo on this one?
Oh, man. Let's play the verse again on our guitars.
I can picture some harmonica on this one, like on In the Garage off the Blue Album.
Yeah, I can hear that. I'm telling you, man, they got to like George Lucas this thing and go back in and add some acoustic guitar texturing, some single note guitar stuff, harmonica, maybe toss out hash pipe.
So, the Blue Album?
Asshole. The next song is Simple Pages. T To me, this song is like Rivers' declaration that he is just going to keep things simple with his songwriting. He sings, "Kick it on back to what you know. Give me some love, sugar on the hard rock radio." He's like, "I'm just going to write this pop stuff and not expose my inner feelings like I did on the last record."
Mixing that with just a simple "Come Back to Me" song, he's singing about a gal who he wants to come back home to him.
Yeah, it has a driving beat, much like many of the songs on this record. It just kind of, you know, moves forward. Big downstrokes. Sounds really good loud.
Yeah. And going back to the lyrics for a second, he seems to be longing for, like, simpler times when he talks about the old school beat. But I also get a sense that simple pages could mean, like, a person who's easy to read. "I can read you because we are similar." There's that line, "Can't you see? You're just me. Turn these pages of my mind."
Yeah. Or "Maybe I confused you with all that deep stuff on Pinkerton. I'm just the same guy you loved on Blue."
Yeah.
Let's move on to "Glorious Day."
Glorious children.
A lot of songs on this record have very positive song titles. You have "Glorious Day," "Smile," "Island in the Sun." I guess that's only three, but combined with the green like album cover, I always got a very warm, happy feeling from this record.
Oh, totally. Album covers can make a huge difference on how I perceive the songs.
This song speaks of the potential for a really good day. "Gonna make my move, gonna make it stay, gonna make it last, never mind the past, living for today."
Glorious plans and glorious ways to waste your time. You know, doing the things that make you happy. They probably aren't a waste of time, but, you know, it's like, it's the simple things.
Yeah. According to Cuomo, "Glorious Day" was written based on a life-changing experience he had while watching the sunset on a local beach in California.
Sounds good. I'll take one of those. But again, this song speaks to a desire from this band to keep things simple, keep it positive, get back to the basics that made their first album a hit.
Though I'd argue the songs on the first album are way more interesting. Even if some of the lyrics on Blue made absolutely no sense, that was still something that elevated the album. Whereas, as much as I like this album, it could have been strengthened in many ways, and I think that's what we've been talking about all along, that disappointment that it could have been a lot better.
Yeah, I still really do like this record. I think there's a lot of great songs on it. I think, like we said earlier, this back half tends to kind of run together. Plus, the songs are really short. Sometimes I lose track of what song I'm on. But it's the last song when I think more than makes up for it all.
Oh, yeah? You like the last one?
Oh, totally. Are we going to talk about it now?
We can. All right. "Oh, Girlfriend." So why do you like this one?
Oh, I don't know. It's just sweet and sad and just one of the songs on this album I tend to gravitate toward.
According to Rivers, in a YouTube video I watched of him performing this acoustically, "When I lived in the top of Beechwood Canyon, it's this big hill in Hollywood, up by the Hollywood sign, my girlfriend lived at the bottom of the hill. It was so convenient. Every time I went out or came back home, I'd go by her house and stop in for a bit. But then, when we broke up, it really sucked, because every time I went out or came back, I had to go by her house. So this song was about that feeling, going by her house."
Yeah, that's totally what he's singing about. Driving past her house, missing being with her. He's drifting and lost. I couldn't imagine driving by my ex's house every time I went home.
Yeah. Yeah, that would not be good. This song has a bit of guitar layering in the verses and some excellent harmonizing in the choruses.
It's just totally somber, and though it doesn't depart too much from the other songs, it still stands out to me.
This song recycles the bridge from Rivers' demo song Rosemary, a song written around 1997. Apparently, the song Rosemary was one of the songs the band would play while auditioning new bass players before arriving at Mikey.
Not the sweater song or something? Rosemary? If you can master this deep cut, you're in.
Auditioning bass players must have been like, what the hell? What's this song? Anyway, Oh Girlfriend is a solid closer for the Green Album. A song they actually never really play live. I don't know if I've ever seen them play it. It would be rad to hear some of these Green era tunes live.
Yeah, when I saw them, they played the hits, basically. They didn't play any of the deep cuts.
Yeah, when you've got a catalog as vast as Weezer's, you're probably not playing the deep cuts off the Green album. But, you know, those are the songs I'd want to hear.
Oh, me too.
So, what is a Green era demo you think should have made the album?
Oh, wow. Jeez. There are so many. You know, I always really like Mad Cow. It chugs a lot with these palm mutes and just sounds a bit different than some of the other stuff. Plus, I love the chorus. I think it's like, but no one can save me now. I'm lost like a cow. Madness burning inside my brain. It would have made Green, I think, a bit more interesting, maybe. Do you have one?
I think it's criminal that Aileen isn't on here. It's very catchy and very poppy. I almost feel like in the 90s, this song would have been a hit. It has that late 90s vibe, and with the backing vocal parts, it just has what it takes, I think, to be like, I think it should be on the album.
Oh, yeah, that song is awesome. Great bass, and you're totally right. It could have been a strong track. Maybe they already had the hip hip from Island in the Sun and didn't want another song with woo woo.
Probably. All right, Brian, so that wraps up the tracks on Green. So I want to take a look at this art real quick. Not much to it. The art direction was handled by Chris Bilheimer with photography from Marina Chavez and Carl Cook. It's the band standing in front of a green background, you know, kind of like blue, but green. Maybe like, you know, throwback to the Rick Ocasek era. We're going to do the same cover. I feel like this is a way to symbolize the band's back-to-basics approach, you know, they took while recording the album. This is evident in a quote in the liner notes on the album. Yeah, I'll try my best here. Tornimo al antico la sera un progresso. Probably just butchered that, but this is a quote from the Italian opera composer Giuseppe Verdi that roughly translates to, "Let us return to old times. And that will be progress."
Always throwing in the opera references.
Yeah. The picture inside of the CD booklet is a photo of Weezer playing live, featuring in the lower right-hand corner the overlay of the silhouettes of Mike Nelson, Tom Servo, and Crow T. Robot from the television show Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Yes! I love that show.
It's so good. In closing, according to Luke Smith in an article written for the Michigan Daily, this time around, the song isn't the same. Or moreover, the songs are all the same. Cuomo's formulaic tunage dominates the 10 tracks on Weezer, that despite a rare exception, could have been written off a chord chart in a Guitar for Beginners book. Stereo Gum stated, "A quick dagger of an album, with an acoustic curated sound so tight that it feels like it might crack at any moment, spilling the radioactive goo of pure pop rock inside." It's not a great record. It's not a terrible record. Weezer has both. But this one really isn't so bad. Sure, we've complained about its short runtime, boring solos, odd lyrics, and sameness, but it's also rocking, has fun upbeat songs, memorable choruses, and keep things simple. Sometimes I like simple. Sometimes when I'm bombing down the highway in mid-July, Island in the Sun or Knock Down Drag Out just hits the spot in a simple way. Whether you choose to believe Rivers purposely retaliated for the way Pinkerton was received by making a bland album on purpose, or whether you believe the band just wanted to get a foot back in the door by being a bit more careful this time around, this is the album that pulled Weezer out of the grave and got them moving again. Some would argue that they should have stayed there. Though I never really liked the albums that came after, save for a few songs, I'm glad they're still making music. You never know when something might land again.
I don't believe for a minute he made a bland album on purpose. No one invests that much time in a studio and purposely writes things that aren't their best work. Like you said, they were trying to climb back in, and with the record people breathing down their necks, this is the album that came out. But I like it. It's not blue, but maybe that's unfair. This is the band. They write pop songs and put odd references in their songs. They say weird things like crab at the booty. Green is fun. It's light where Pinkerton was dark, and it has big loud guitars and big loud drums. And yeah, I keep coming back to it. I wish Mikey could have stayed in the band a bit longer, but I'll always hold this one dear. It was fun poring over it back in the day with you.
And now we get to do it so many years later.
I appreciate that. I don't listen to Weezer much anymore, and it was fun to dive back into them a bit these past few weeks. I still can't really listen to some of their later albums, but that's all right. For me, other bands like Ozma were doing the Weezer thing better than Weezer.
I love Ozma.
Let's talk about them sometime.
You've got it, Bri. Anyway, Brian, I would like to thank you so much for hanging out with me today.
Thank you, Jay.
And this was a lot of fun. Like you said, we used to talk about Weezer all the time. It's glad to finally record these thoughts that we had. Anyway, I'd like to thank Weezerpedia, Carl's Corner, various places on the internet where I dug some of this information up. I would like to thank Chris DeMakes from Less Than Jake for the theme music. And I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Talking Records. It's a blast to dive into these fantastic albums, chat about these songs, and try to gather up all the information we can on the history of the record right here on this podcast. Check us out on the socials. Make sure you say hello, suggest albums we should do, and tell us, what do you think of Weezer Green? All right, Brian, anything before we go?
Nope, you said it all. Thanks again for having me on.
All right, Brian. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.